Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Cause confusion and even consternation within the conservative religious and political communities in our nation. Millions of concerned Americans are asking, how could the Clinton administration nominate for Surgeon General a woman who believes in killing babies, in providing prophylactic counseling to America's vulnerable teenagers, and in supporting the establishment of school-based clinics all across America? Men and women of moral convictions have great difficulty believing that our morals in government have deteriorated to the place that we're supporting anti-life programs. But our current administration in Washington seems determined to make as many moral blunders as possible, as quickly as possible. So far, the administration's success rate has been spectacular. Dr. Elders unquestionably supports school-based clinics. Perhaps it is in order for me to define for you what school-based clinics do, why they exist. Before I do that, let me tell you of an outstanding book which discusses at length what we're talking about today. In 1986, Barrett L. Mossbacher edited the book, School-Based Clinics and Other Critical Issues in Public Education. The various chapters in the book were written by men of national and even international reputation. Some of the authors are Dr. William Bennett, Dr. Julian Simon, Dr. John W. Whitehead, Dr. Russell Kirk, Dr. Jacqueline Cassan, and Dr. Alan C. Carlson. The foreword was written by Dr. D. James Kennedy. It is a book which ought to be in the hands of every mother, father, preacher, politician, and other concerned American. One of the chapters in this splendid book was written by editor Barrett L. Mossbacher, who is president of the Christian Action Council of North Carolina. Mossbacher quotes from George Dreyfus, a strong supporter of school-based clinics. Please listen carefully to what George Dreyfus says about the purpose of school-based clinics. School-based clinics provide comprehensive health care, including family planning. Each provides individual counseling about sexuality, gynecologic examinations, and follow-up examinations for family planning patients. They either offer contraceptive prescriptions in the clinic or refer to off-site birth control clinics. Soon after the program's reception, that is in St. Paul, Minnesota, the staff began to offer a wider variety of health services in order to broaden the clinic's appeal and to protect teenagers attending the clinic from being stigmatized. These new services included athletic, job and college physicals, immunizations, and a weight control program. Page 70. George Dreyfus further says, high rates of childbearing among students often are cited as the rationale for initiating on-site health clinics. Yet school-based clinics generally are presented as comprehensive, multi-service units that emphasize physical examination and treatment of minor illnesses. In most clinics, new patients, whether male or female, are asked at their initial visit if they are sexually active. If they are or plan to be soon, they are encouraged to practice contraception. If a young woman is interested in obtaining a birth control method, she is given a pelvic examination and a pap smear as part of her physical examination. Contraceptives are generally prescribed following counseling. In another program, students who miss a monthly follow-up visit receive a telephone call at home from the school nurse requesting simply that they return to the clinic for a checkup. Page 69. If you're not familiar with the term school-based clinics, you may be tempted to think of them as being innocuous or neutral or perhaps even beneficial. And that is precisely what radicals like Dr. Elders and supporters of Planned Parenthood want you to think. Let me sketch briefly for you the purposes and plans of school-based clinics. Let me speak first from a negative viewpoint. The school-based clinics do not exist primarily to promote abstinence. In an article in the Tennessean on July the 24th, 1993, Dr. Elders told Senator Dan Coats of Indiana that she had taught her children to be abstinent. "Every parent I know," she affirmed, "supports and teaches abstinence." Page 2A. Yet Dr. Elders supports school-based clinics, which do not exist, to teach abstinence. In fact, the American Civil Liberties Union stands guard over these clinics and other school programs to be sure abstinence is not taught, since abstinence is supposed to be a religious concept. How totally illogical and inconsistent for Dr. Elders to pretend she supports both abstinence and the school-based clinics. She cannot do both, unless she is either naive or ignorant, or both. If the school-based clinics were to promote abstinence, they would be out of business. Planned Parenthood and the ACLU would never stand for that. The school-based clinics do not exist to stop teenage pregnancies. If they do exist for that purpose, they have been and still are colossal failures. I will give you evidence of their failure before our program is over today. But let me say in passing, promoters of the school-based clinics and other sex education programs are not interested in stopping teenage pregnancy. Their major purposes seem to be to promote hedonism, libertinism, and irresponsible sexual behavior. These are certainly serious charges. But what else can we conclude when we know the philosophy and the practices of the school-based clinics? The school-based clinics do not exist to stop or to slow down abortions among teenagers and other American women. If they really wanted to stop abortions, they could find a better way than what they are currently using. They could inform young people that premarital sex is wrong, always wrong. They could show young men and women the various stages of a child's development within the womb. If the groups supporting school-based clinics really wanted to stop teenage promiscuity and teenage abortions, they would cease giving advice like the following from Changing Bodies, Changing Lives, one of Planned Parenthood's most highly recommended books. Please listen. Our main message is this: move at your own speed. Do only what you are sure you want to do, or at least as sure as you can be. We who are writing this book believe that a lot of society's moralistic attitudes and rules about sex can make people feel unnecessarily guilty about feelings and activities that are a part of being human. For some people, including many teenagers, religious attitudes about sex are very important. There, that is, the religious people's voice may say, "Wait, wait, wait. These feelings you are having belong only in marriage, or some forms of sex and homosexuality are sinful. You will have to decide for yourself how important these messages are for you." How can we stop teenage sexual promiscuity, teenage pregnancies, and teenage abortions when we tell young people that they will have to decide for themselves how important moral messages from their parents or their religious leaders are? The young people are not to rely on parents, on preachers and teachers, but on themselves. When a teenager's hormones are racing and he has to make a sexual decision on his own, what does he care about his partner, the child who may be conceived, the state of the economy, or any other matter? If Dr. Elders and other supporters of school-based clinics cannot see the dangers involved, then they do not deserve our respect and support. But they do understand. They just simply do not have the moral values which most Americans do. Unfortunately, in many cases, they could care less. Originally, the so-called school-based clinics were organized to provide comprehensive health care, including family planning. I think very few of us would have any problems with school-based clinics if they provided physical examinations, set broken limbs, gave medicine for colds and fevers, and performed various other health services. But they do not exist for those purposes. While I did not have any health care when I was in elementary school or in high school, I have had available such care on the college and the university level. It is certainly not inappropriate for elementary schools and high schools to have nurses and or doctors available for their young people. But we are not talking simply of bandaging a cut finger or performing a physical examination for a school athlete. What the school-based clinics do is to tell young people about family planning, contraceptives, abortion, and such like. Personally, I do not know anyone in any public school I would want giving this information to our young people. Many psychologists, school counselors, and other healthcare people simply do not have the moral values which our children must have if they are to avoid sexual promiscuity and the killing of their own babies. Besides, who gave our public schools the authority to interfere with the home's responsibility to bring our children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord? Some school personnel often reply to our criticisms of their taking over family roles and responsibilities by saying, "But the homes are not providing the information and attitudes our young people need." I freely admit that such criticism is often valid, but the public schools are not doing any better. In fact, the schools are not doing very well with their primary responsibility, which is to teach our children reading, writing, and arithmetic. How do they think they can teach them far more sophisticated and complicated subjects, such as sexual functioning and moral restraint? There are good and capable teachers who work in this area, but the numbers are too scarce for us to depend on them. We must apply pressure on the public schools to cease and desist teaching on birth control, family planning, and abortion. How effective are school-based clinics and sex education courses in the public schools? That seems to me to be a fair question in view of the hundreds of millions of dollars we spend on sex education every year. Mosbacher says that from 1971 to 1981, total federal expenditures on family planning programs, exclusive of state and local expenditures, exceeded $2 billion, with total expenditures in 1985 alone exceeding $622 million. Page 63. Now here is a startling and discouraging fact. Teenage pregnancies and abortions are far worse as a result of all this money than before. Please listen to this paragraph from Barrett Mosbacher's book. "Despite this unprecedented increase in family planning services and sex education courses, the rates of teenage sexual activity, pregnancy, and abortion continued to grow. From 1971 to 1981, there was a 306% increase in federal expenditures on family planning, with a corresponding 48.3% increase in pregnancies and a 133% increase in abortion for women aged 15 to 19. Moreover, those states with the highest expenditures on birth control and with similar social demographic characteristics showed the largest increases in abortions and illegitimate birth between 1970 and 1979. Page 64. My friends, if an industrial corporation were to spend $1 million on a project, and the situation got worse, and another million, and it continued to get worse, we would think the leaders in that corporation would be lacking in good common sense. If they kept on throwing good money after bad money, we would charge them with malicious mischief. Why do we not hold our political and educational leaders accountable for their use of public funds in supporting school-based clinics and sex education? In the words of a country philosopher in Middle Tennessee, we are not using the sense God gave a June bug. But maybe only religiously oriented people have failed to see the good such programs do. What do psychologists, sociologists, professional educators say about school-based clinics and sex education in the public school? I'm glad you asked, and I'm about to give you information on that question. there at Mossbacher, quotes the following words from Douglas Kirby, Director of Research for the Center for Population Options. Past studies of sex education suggest several conclusions. They indicate that sex education can increase knowledge, but they also indicate that most programs have relatively little impact on values, particularly values regarding one's personal behavior. They also indicate that programs do not affect the incidence of sexual activity. According to one study, sex education programs may increase the use of birth control among some groups, but not among others. Results of another study indicate they have no measurable impact on the use of birth control. According to one study, they are associated with lower pregnancy rates, while another study indicates they are not. Programs certainly do not appear to have as dramatic an impact on behavior as professionals once hoped. Page 65. Since we have learned from various studies just how ineffective and destructive many sex education programs are, surely we will remove them from the public schools. Not likely. There are too many people in our nation who have a vested interest in promoting immorality. The National Education Association, the American Civil Liberties Union, Planned Parenthood, the Hollywood establishment, religious liberalism, and others. The Alan Guttmacher Institute is the research arm of Planned Parenthood. Barrett Mossbacher records their 1981 report entitled Teenage Pregnancy, the Problem That Has Not Gone Away. The Alan Guttmacher Institute study says, we know that many teenagers are making great efforts to prevent pregnancy, that more of them are using contraceptives and using them earlier and more consistently than ever before. Many are doing it successfully. Yet pregnancy rates among U.S. teenagers are increasing, and teenage birth rates, though declining, are still among the highest in the world. Now please listen to the reason teenage birth rates are declining. The decline in birth rates is largely contingent on continued access to legal abortions. Page 65. Planned Parenthood kills more babies than any other organization in the world. And yet, its research organization says the only reason for a decline in teenage birth rates is the fact that legal killing of babies is readily available. This excerpt from the Alan Guttmacher Institute should be an eye-opener. But most politicians and liberal academicians already know what I have told you. If they care about our teenagers, they have a peculiar way of showing it. Faye Waddleton, the attractive, articulate former president of Planned Parenthood, was given the Humanist of the Year Award in 1986. Mossbacher quotes from her acceptance speech as she received that award. She argued that sexuality education must be a fundamental part of the school curricula from kindergarten through 12th grade in every school district in this country. Easier access to contraception must be another priority. Access without any barriers. We must establish many more school-based clinics that provide contraceptives as part of general health care. Page 66. Faye Waddleton can preach this immoral doctrine, and she has done so at every conceivable opportunity, but she does not want it applied to her own daughter. Please listen further. The threat of teenage pregnancy hits home the hardest if you have children, and particularly if you have a daughter. My daughter is 10, and, like other 10-year-olds, she has got the world on a string. My solace in confronting her sexual maturation is the knowledge that she attends an all-girl school, and that's exactly where I intend to keep her for as long as I can. Page 66. Was it Shakespeare who said, O consistency, thou art a jewel? That is a jewel Faye Waddleton has not yet discovered. Faye Waddleton is a humanist, as I have just indicated. How can she argue that sexuality education must be a fundamental part of school curriculum? How could she justify her use of the word must when she recognizes no absolute standard of conduct for anyone? In secular humanism, ethical rules are self-determined. Every man does that which is right in his own eyes. Is Faye Waddleton trying to legislate for all mankind, or is she merely expressing her opinion? Her opinion, like yours and mine, is worth absolutely nothing when it contradicts what the Bible teaches. Paul strongly insists that they which commit adultery and fornication and homosexuality are not going to inherit the kingdom of God. 1 Corinthians 6, 9-11. Galatians 5, 19-21. One of my favorite authors, especially on educational and moral themes, is Dr. William Bennett, former Secretary of Education, and a great one, may I add. Dr. Bennett has one chapter in Barrett Mossbacher's book, School-Based Clinics. Dr. Bennett's chapter has the title, Sex and the Education of Our Children. He says, for example, we simply need to put students in the presence of adults who know the difference between right and wrong, who will articulate it to their children, who will remind them of the human experience with that difference, and who will live that difference before them. Page 157. Dr. Bennett further says, but to neglect questions of character in a sex education class would be a great and unforgivable error. A sex education course in which issues of right and wrong do not occupy center stage is an evasion and an irresponsibility. Page 158. Dr. Bennett quotes Larry Cuban, a professor of education at Stanford University, as saying concerning sex education and school-based clinics, decade after decade, statistics have demonstrated the ineffectiveness of such courses in reducing sexual activity and teenage pregnancy. In the arsenal of weapons to combat teenage pregnancy, school-based clinic programs are but a bent arrow. However, bent arrows do offer the illusion of action. Page 159. If current sex education programs and school-based clinics are wrong-headed, and they unquestionably are, what are we going to do about the alarming number of teenage pregnancies, the tremendous increase in cases of sexually transmitted diseases, including AIDS, and the proliferation of abortions in America? We cannot sit idly by and do nothing. But we should not make matters worse, as has happened with the liberal establishment's attempts to remedy the situation. The solution is not really all that hard to find, if we really want to find it. First, we must teach our young people at home, in church, and in the school, the moral values which come from the very mind of God. I'm not suggesting a marriage of the church and the state, but there is no other solution. Attempting to help young people learn the difference between right and wrong without some reference to God's law is futile. It never has worked, and it never will work. Ethics without God makes no sense at all, at least not to reasonable people. Second, parents must get involved in their children's education. We must make absolutely sure that sexual immorality and irresponsibility are not being promoted on the campuses of American schools, as is happening right now throughout the United States. The schools must not overstep their bounds of responsibility. Our children are on loan from God to parents, not to the state and not to the school. God will hold us, parents, accountable for their training and education. Third, make sure to elect officials on the local, state, and federal levels of government who have moral convictions. Elected officials are likely to appoint judges, cabinet officers, and others who have about the same convictions, political and otherwise, that they have. Why should that surprise anyone? My friends, we thank you for listening today. We earnestly hope and pray you will continue to listen. Thank you, and may God bless you.